newest episode of the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Rao.
I am Dan Mecca, still.
And we are joined by Connor O'Donnell.
Once again.
Now, we missed the last two weeks. We didn't see Nightmare on Elm Street. And
shame.
And it was finals week, so the losers, do you want to just briefly talk about the losers?
We saw Losers a couple days before it came out. Our college had a pre-screening, and we all, I think, enjoyed it a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised it's still only at 41% at Rotten Tomatoes, and also that it made $20 million so far. It's not going to make its $25 million budget back.
No, it is a shame, especially, I mean, now, because that means that, I mean, they'll probably kill any plans for a sequel.
Yeah. Not that I think that was a movie that needed a sequel, even though I did enjoy it a lot, but just, I mean, in terms of the weight of those actors, you know, like, people deserve to see Columbus Short and, you know, Dean Morgan, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Idris Elba,
Chris Evans.
Well, they'll see more Chris Evans, but in more movies.
Yeah.
Even though you'd be able to see Idris Elba in Tigers.
We take. Which got pushed back to August. I mean, I don't know why.
It looks so promising.
We'll see then. All right, so let's move in. So the losers recommended. I would say check it out.
Definitely, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it's probably a $2 movie theater. So
by now, yeah, 2 weeks later.
So enjoy it.
All right, so first, let's talk about the new Inception trailer. 2 minutes and 18 seconds of just heaven.
It looks good.
Yeah.
It looks very
good. I mean, if that 2:18 could translate into 2 hours and 18 minutes of the same thing, I think Christopher Nolan has the best movie he's made to date on his hands.
I tend to agree.
Absolutely.
I tend to agree. Yeah, there's just so much freaking crazy imagery, like, in this, that we don't even, like...
And it only gets better, too. Yeah. Like, the first part of the trailer, I mean, it's the third trailer, so the first half of it is made up of a lot of things that you've seen in the first two already. You know, and so you're just kind of like, oh, okay, whatever, Inception. And then, like, about, like, halfway through, like, the Hans Zimmer score picks up, and the score, side note, score, if this is anything like what's going to be in the movie, it's awesome.
It actually is not that droning thing. Oh, it's made by someone else. It's not Hans Zimmer.
That makes me sad. But it's very cool nonetheless. And once that picks up in the trailer just gets going.
Yeah, but the droning thing is only half of what makes the
music
in the
trailer.
That,
you know,
it picks up. Yeah.
Like, that's Hans Zimmer.
Clearly
from the Dark Knight parts of it. Not so.
But it's, I mean, everything, literally, I mean, if you could...
Can we quickly check on the computer? When did Hans Zimmer win an Oscar? Because me and Connor were talking about this earlier, and I said that he had won, and I'm pretty sure that he has. But I didn't think it was for Gladiator, so I should check. But just while Jordan's checking that, yeah, I mean, I think that the film looks promising. Leonardo DiCaprio looks well cast. Everybody looks like they really knew what they were doing.
I mean, even
all the way up until the Tom Hardy finish, the little punchline finish. You know,
that's like,
you know, everything just seems to be in the same place.
He won an Oscar for The Lion King,
and that's
why
I always forget that is the strange one.
But he's been nominated for Rain Man. People can just download that. They should mix those two. That'd be amazing.
I
know. Rain Man, The Preacher's Wife, As Good as It Gets, The Prince of Egypt.
Yeah, nominated for The Preacher's Wife.
Thin Red Line, Gladiator, and then Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. I knew he got nominated for Gladiator.
He got nominated for all those.
Yeah, you should have won for Gladiator.
It was good.
It was a great score.
But yeah, no, so, I mean, just check out the Inception trailer and watch it multiple times like we have. I think
you will. You will. There's no way you can watch it and then not watch it.
We were talking about this at the bar a couple nights ago. I think it's interesting the way that, because it is a Christopher Nolan film, but the way that they're marketing it is very, I think, smart, because there's a lot of it's on Christopher Nolan's name, a lot of it's on Leonardo DiCaprio's name, but really, the third trailer, a lot of it is on the premise, which I think is cool. Like, they explain the premise in the trailer, what Inception is, the idea of stealing dreams and planting dreams.
They did it perfectly, because I was worried if they were going to...
Because I think that they're doing what they didn't do quite when they were for the marketing for The Prestige, which is like another Christopher Nolan non-franchise film. Because The Prestige didn't do great in theaters. It didn't do poorly, really, I guess. It didn't cost a lot, but like, it didn't do great. Yeah. And I think part of the reason was because I think they didn't rely as much. I think they relied too much on Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman. And, you know, they aren't really stars.
Which, I mean, I wouldn't blame, I mean, anybody who was doing marketing for The Prestige, I wouldn't blame them. I mean, whoever was responsible for that, I wouldn't blame them for that because, I mean...
Well, I mean, I kind of would, because Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale will never be Bruce Willis, Tom Cruise.
No, that's true, but I mean, think about the demographic that loves both of those actors. Batman Begins had come out prior to The Prestige.
No, I would say it was a miscalculation because I think that people thought that Christian Bale had gained a lot of clout because of Batman Begins, which might have been true, but that doesn't mean that. Kind of like with Robert Pattinson, just because he's in a movie like Remember Me or Little Ashes doesn't mean people are going to go see it just because he's in it, because it's not really Robert Pattinson, right. It's Edward Cullen, so it's not really Christian Bale, it's Bruce Wayne.
The Runaways and Remember Me.
The Runaways, it's not really Kristen Stewart.
They didn't really do that well
either. Right, exactly. It's you know, Bella, Bird, Swan, whatever. Yeah. Yeah, so... But no, I mean, it looks awesome. You know, the scene where he's running through the walls that are closing looks awesome. The buildings are collapsing against that, like...
Every shot with Marion Cotillard in it is beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Not just because of composition, but because Marion Cotillard is in it.
Yeah.
And because of composition.
Oh, well, yeah.
And
the scene folding onto itself.
Yeah, I mean, it all just... Literally, every aspect, from what the trailer shows, every aspect of it is...
If there was a wedding or funeral, if there is a wedding or funeral on July 16th, I won't be attending.
Yeah.
Because I have to go see Inception.
Maybe not. I mean, hopefully, I'll see it July 15th.
Damn, I'm getting married midnight. On July 16th, I didn't tell you.
Oh, no, I'm not going.
All right. I'm not going to my own wedding.
All right. She'll have to wait.
All right. So,
July 16th. So
I actually am going to marry Inception July 16th. So
I will proceed with that.
Yeah. I will be.
You guys should go to that wedding.
I will be your best man.
Nice. All right.
Let's move on. Kristen wrote up a story. She is our writer that was at Tribeca.
This is on the completely other side of the Hollywood spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. And she was at Tribeca and interviewed a little startup company. Called a Big Vision Empty Wallet, and it's launched to support the New York City film scene, and it's kind of this website that is like all encompassing with job listings and reviews of indie movies and just pre-production stuff, and they said because there was no site that really included everything on one. There was sites, you know, review sites separately from job listing sites.
There's Massify.com, which is like Facebook for filmmakers.
There's also
anyone who's listening, I urge you to check out Massify.com because it's actually very cool, and actually Killer Films, the company I worked for last summer, they are involved along with Lionsgate with Massify to make short films, and Lionsgate and Killer Films produce them, and so they give actually Richard Kelly's cousin, I believe, recently shot a film called Charlie for Killer Films, and I think Lionsgate in it. I had a chance to see a cut of it, and it's pretty solid. So I'm just saying, check out Massify because you can find work, whether it be free or paying.
Dan and I just literally graduated college this
yesterday. Congratulations.
Yesterday.
So we're heading out, you know, and we're brought to New York City film scene. So it's kind of cool to see that there's sites like this that are really
right. And also a couple months ago, I can't remember the specifics, but Tribeca-based company announced the theater that was going to do a lot of limited releases for films, and that was kind of, and then you have films like Breaking Upwards, for example, which are getting nice little, urban runs and critical attention because of things like Netflix Watch Instantly. Those people are going to be able to make $5 million movies in a couple of years, probably. You know, you'll probably be able to see.
It's really cool to see all this stuff change. Like that. Right,
yeah. Things are bad, but at its worst, you know, things happen like this always. Yeah. And so hopefully in 10 years we can be watching things like El Mariachi and Sex Lies and Videotape and Reservoir Dogs come back up.
And I think it really has to do with, on the same note, I've recently been, a couple people have told me about this website called Kickstarter.com.
Oh, right, yeah.
Where you can, and for anybody who's listening who doesn't know, it's a website where you can post a project, you can pitch a project to Kickstarter.com, and it actually doesn't even need to be a film. It could be any kind of project that you would like money for. And if they approve it through, I don't remember what it's called, it's like Amazon's payment thing.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, they do it in conjunction with Amazon, and people can read up on your project, and they make pledges, and what you do is you announce, you set like a goal, like a minimum thing. So if you set $5,000 as your goal, you have 90 days to have people pledge $5,000, and they work on an all-or-nothing system. So if you make that $5,000 within the 90 days, before the 90 days is up, you can keep making more.
Yeah, there's a filmmaker we follow on Twitter, Gary King. We actually watched one of his movies, and he did $10,000 for a musical he wants to make, and he raised it.
And also, I have a friend named Kate Zabinski, who's a filmmaker, and she did on Facebook. She created a group and had, I think she needed 1,500 or it might have been $3,000 to bring a Russian orchestra to America or get money to go to Russia to film it. And she got it, and they're making the documentary right now.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And it looks actually really cool. If you go on Facebook, Zabinski, Z-A-B-I-N, Sky, you can see it, check it out. And it looks promising, like kind of like Haima, if you're a fan of Sigurus, awesome. Like Haima. So. But yeah, so this is all good. I hope this keeps continuing.
It's nice to see, because I mean, I think now more than ever, with social networking and things like that,
digitally
and the internet, and like I feel like for the first time ever, the internet is actually really affecting the way.
Yeah. I mean, say what you will. People make a lot. People made us think about the post-Obama thing because people, you know, when Obama won, people said, and truthfully, because of the internet generation, joystick generation, whatever you want to call it, because of us who are talking and probably who are listening, Obama won, and that's true. But then people have said, you know, of course, after he won, none of us had anything to do with it. Kind of, we let him do what he's doing, and that's debatable on its own. But I think that argument aside, you can see a similar kind of activism coming in the arts with things like, you know, for example, that what's the movie that the guy who directed The Wackness is doing about the zombie?
Jonathan Levine.
Right? You know, he's like that. This guy online who's like self-publishing these books about zombies and like love stories, zombie love stories, and Hollywood picks it up before you know it. You know what I mean? And these things are happening online. I mean, these things, the Random House isn't picking up these books. It's not like Penguin. You know, it's not. So I think it's a good sign for the future, you know, for people like us. So.
It's the way of the future.
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 All right.
That's it.
Aviator.
See it. Live it.
Yes.
All right. On to the next one.
On to the next one. So, On the Road. Dave, do you want to introduce the story?
On the Road, I mean, I'm sure most people have at least heard of it. It's a novel by Jack Kerouac, who's one of the beatniks of the Beat Generation. You know, William Burroughs, Allen Ginsberg. And it's one of the penultimate books from that age. It's essentially a fictionalized autobiography about Jack Kerouac's journey across country with really no money back in the 50s, 60s, you know, when drugs and alcohol were high and free lovers were down the rain, or I mean, at least in their circle of friends. And so Jack Kerouac changed his character's name to Sal Paradise. Dean Moriarty was, I believe, Neil, I can't remember his last name, but of the pack, the Beats, and Allen Ginsberg has a character in there. William Burroughs has a character
in
there.
John Cage also in there too.
Maybe I don't think he has a big role. Yeah. But yeah. Anyway, so it's getting made into a movie. Finally, Francis Ford Coppola has been trying to make it into a movie for a long, long time, and but he's actually not directing it.
Yeah.
And it is Walter Salles, who is a very, very good director. Actually, he directed The Motorcycle Diaries. Most recently, most notably, and he had a lot to do with City of God, which a lot of people kind of forget about. He was a producer on it, and he helped Fernando Meirelles a lot with locations and stuff.
Doesn't it all? Screenwriter is also the same as Motorcycle Diaries.
Yeah. He wrote Jose Rivera. The writer of Motorcycle Diaries is doing the adaptation.
On the Road. Awesome. That's good.
Yeah. Oscar nominated too for that.
So Coppola's producing. And also the cast is very promising, I think, and you talk about.
Kristen Stewart will play Mary Lou, who's the bride of Dean Moriarty, who will be played by Garrett Hedlund, who is in Tron Legacy. And Friday Night Lights, actually, which I've always heard great things about that show. I've never watched it ever. And then Sam Riley from Control will be the lead.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. He was in a bigger movie, I think, recently. He's kind of in like small films, but like, didn't he have a small part in a big film? I could be wrong. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but yeah, he's great in Control.
He's gonna be a great Kerouac, though.
He was in Franklin. Remember that movie?
Oh, he was in Franklin. Yeah. Oh my God, that's.
But funny. He really hasn't made anything since Control. He's in the remake of 13.
Oh, okay. Maybe that was what I was thinking of. Yeah. But
yeah, but it's gonna be made for $25 million, and
that's a good
production soon. So.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I am actually surprised that the film, not that the book is cinematic at all. I mean, the way it's written is very, I mean, honestly, I'm not a big fan of it just because it's actually very dry because there's no plot because he's on the road. It's literally, you know, kind of that time. I would recommend something like Naked Lunch in terms of.
It's infinite.
In terms of, I don't know, I mean, what's funny about the Beat Generation just quickly is like how different the three headstones of it were, you know, like Allen Ginsberg, you know, or Hal. Actually, ironically, Hal just got me into a movie, which is Allen Ginsberg's most famous work, but Hal is more of a biopic which is about the trials against the poem.
I kind of got mixed reviews. I heard it.
It got mixed reviews, right? But I mean, that's interesting that movie just came out. And then Naked Lunch came out in 1990. It was adapted, I think, into a very underrated movie by David Cronenberg. And then,
it's a very Cronenberg film.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And I think, in terms of, I mean, an unadaptable book, Naked Lunch is, but they adapted it very, very well. And hopefully on the road, probably the easiest of those three. And I mean, hopefully, you know, they kind of make the most of it. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, Coppola has his hands all over it, hopefully. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the second to last story. George Lucas is producing a movie called Red Tails. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a new story a while ago that this is actually a World War II fighter plane film, but there was a new story a while ago that the original director, Anthony Hemingway, like, remember that with the reshoots, like, George Lucas came in and stepped in.
Wasn't he directing the reshoots?
Yeah. So
apparently wasn't true.
But then it kind of was.
First showing stood by it.
Yeah.
But then we all got emails from the PR people saying it wasn't true. But, like, it's probably not going to come out this year, right?
I wouldn't think so, no.
It still says on IMDb, but probably not.
Yeah, but anyways, the first photos came out. It was actually posted accidentally by, like, the film gear rental company that rented out equipment for it. And, I mean, just looking at that now, you can check them out on the film stage, but, I mean, George Lucas is, you see a picture of George Lucas on set doing his thing.
Looking large as ever.
Looking all sorts of Lucas.
Yeah.
But no, the planes look, I mean, the planes look cool. They look authentic. I don't know.
It's cool. It's shot digitally. I think that'll be cool.
Yeah,
and I mean, even Lucas's unfortunate recent work. if anything,
disaster.
Whatever you want to call it, debacle.
Mismanagement.
Yes. If anything, you could at least argue that based on that, any sort of dogfight.
As long as it's not like.
Skyrim Crawlers?
Flyboys.
Starring James Franco. Provided it's nothing
Does
like that.
Does anybody remember that weird period in James Franco's life when he was like the B-movie star? He was in like Annapolis, Flyboys, like these like strangely awful movies. Wasn't he in The Great Raid, which is directed by the Dahl brothers? Like, what the fuck? What happened there for like a minute? And then he's like, alright, maybe I should be.
I'm gonna get serious. Yeah, he had a. I mean, City by the Sea was good. That was amazing.
Yeah, that's an underrated movie. Michael Caine Jones, good director.
He was in during those stints, though. He was also in the Spider-Man franchise, which
Those were like his in-between movies. Like while Tobey Maguire was doing things like The Good German, he was doing things like
Flyboys. Freaks and Geeks. That's how he kind of started.
But I'm just saying, like, after he got Bane, he like did those fucking horrible movies. That was so funny. Yeah. Like, but anyway, no. I mean, I think you know. We've said about the Star Wars films, say what you will about the dialogue and the writing and the directing and the use of digital cameras and da-da, all that stuff.
The action scenes
are always relatively solid, so hopefully...
We got Terrence Howard, Cuba Gooding Jr., like, as Dan pointed out, he needs this movie.
Right, yeah, I like it, though. It's a unique cast, and you have a lot of young actors who I think are probably going to anchor the film
I could be wrong, though, right? I mean, Red Tails is about the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes.
Right, okay. Now... Who was in the movie The Tuskegee Airmen? It was Lawrence Fishburne. I don't remember. 90s. 90s, I think.
Yeah, Lawrence Fishburne. He was a big... The TV movie?
I don't remember if it was a TV movie. I remember watching it on TV.
It was like a PBS movie. That's what
There's never been a big movie about it.
Wow, Cuba Gooding Jr. was in that.
That's what struck me, is that I remember Cuba Gooding Jr., being in the original. I mean, it was whatever.
Oh, wait, it was directed by who?
Robert
Markowitz. Oh, okay, sorry. I thought that was the dude who directed
It's got a 7.1 on IMDb, so I mean, I guess, I don't know, but... it is very
deceiving.
But I mean, I remember being kind of like, whatever about it when I watched it. I mean, that was years ago on TV. But,
you know what, as long as it's not, like, Miracle CNN.
Yeah, that'll
be good. Then there you go.
Yeah, but movie? I mean, it says on IMDb it has a 2010 release, but no one's talked about it, so I don't know.
Buzz, your girlfriend, but woof.
Sorry. All right, let's move on to our last set of stories, kind of. Now, these stories are going to involve J.J. Abrams and Steven Spielberg.
So everything that is good about Hollywood right now is in there.
Right now, Steven Spielberg. Everything that's ever been good about Hollywood
since the Hollywood bubble started.
Like a doll's eyes. It's like a doll's eyes.
All right, so first...
Going to the water,
All right, Dan.
Hey, Robert Shaw, how's it going?
We all love that movie too. All right. And okay, so before Iron Man 2, which we're gonna review.
Yes.
There was a trailer. Now I didn't get to see it in theaters, but I saw the bootleg.
I did because I go to all some theaters.
Yeah. Well, we went to the same theater.
They knew I was in the theater. All right.
I actually didn't get to see the Inception play. Anyway, so here's the secret project called Super 8. Mm-hmm. And it is J.J. Abrams, an original script by him. And this was the collaboration
I wrote about.
It was Steven Spielberg and is going to executive produce. And they shot this teaser. J.J. Abrams directed this teaser that they shot like a month ago. Like a secret crew. They thought they were filming like a romantic comedy. And then they filmed this action.
It's very similar to what he did with Cloverfield.
Yeah,
when he cast his four leads, five leads.
Yeah, and this is going to be a little bigger budget, 45 to 50 million. It has nothing to do with Cloverfield though. It's going to be released next summer, 2011. It will be shot traditionally and it will not handheld like Cloverfield. And it's going to take place in 1979. And it's going to kind of harken back to
the star Richard Dreyfuss as a man who goes crazy because he sees aliens flying in the air.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sorry.
Well, if you want to, that was Close Encounter.
That was close. Yeah,
I think Steven Spielberg already made that movie.
but he's gonna take from his favorite Spielberg movies, and Spielberg's gonna be there to produce, which is amazing.
I always reference this, but if anyone goes on YouTube and they search J.J. Abrams and then Ted, Ted is a conference.
But if they travel around too, it's kind of like a
brand. Right. And so like most people speak in or around L.A. And J.J. Abrams spoke about just kind of what filmmaking means to him and magic and stuff.
And
like that.
And
he references Jaws specifically.
E.T. as well, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, offhandedly, but he picks scenes from Jaws. And, I mean, you can just tell. I mean, obviously, if not from the way that he films movies, just from the way he's talking, you can just tell he wants to be of that vein of filmmaker,
And I think so far with everything he's promised, I'm not a big follower of Lost, but even through what I've seen of that, like, what he's done with the work that he's produced / directed thus far.
That's
like
a misconception, kind of. Sorry, I just want to clear it up. Yeah. Like, a lot of people talk about it. Like, he only directed the pilot, and then he literally handed the show, and he came up with the initial idea, and then he handed the show over to the...
No, but even the concept in itself. I agree. I think everything that Abrams has brought to the table with literally everything he's worked on.
Gone Fishing.
Is Spielbergian.
Regarding Henry.
In its nature. But think about those concepts. Like those...
No, his concepts are, I guess, a Saving Gone Fishing. 1941. Okay. So...
Yeah, exactly.
I think that like his concepts are
Spielbergian.
High concept Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, it would be what I said. For example, War of the Worlds, from one point of view, Spielberg,
Yeah.
You know, Pinocchio, with robots and aliens, Kubrick, Spielberg, you know what I mean? So I think that, Mission Impossible 3, with the wife, girlfriend, fiancé, stuff like that. Yeah. So I think, you have, I think he's doing things like that, where he's taking, in his TED Talk, he says, E.T., isn't about an alien who crash lands and has to get home. E.T.'s about divorce. And so so he says how a big part of his speech is how when people copy Spielberg films, they don't copy the important things because they don't copy the things that make the story good, because Jaws isn't about a giant shark that's eating people. It's about a man who has to face his fear and save his family, right? So that's...
Granted, he didn't direct Cloverfield, but he...
Right, like Cloverfield is not really about a monster.
It's about two people.
City. It's about a boy loves a girl and has to save her life. And so I think just how Cloverfield establishes, and I think very well establishes that relationship in the first 15 minutes, just as Jaws establishes the family at dynamic in three scenes, this, that, and the third in all of Spielberg's movies. Same Private Ryan,
But do you think Mission Impossible 3 and Star Trek do that stuff? Because I think they're more.
I think that even if J.J. Abrams isn't trying to be Steven Spielberg,
I think Mission Impossible 3 does.
He's still very much. I think even if he's not trying to be Spielberg, he still very much is trying to be one of those filmmakers, one of those. Those George Lucases, those Coppolas, those Spielbergs, those Scorseses, and that, he sort of fit, for instance, Dan, we talked about this, how Star Trek bit is Star Wars.
It is Star Wars.
One of the only major changes, I mean, other than obviously using the Star Trek universe, one of the only major changes plot-wise is that they made Luke Skywalker and Han Solo the same character.
Right, exactly.
You know, and I feel like even that kind of movie, like, you watch that movie, Steven Spielberg could have made that movie, and it would have been different, but it would have been near the same movie. I think.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't know that stuff. But though, Star Trek, I mean, you do care about, I think, Spock and Kirk enough.
The crew. I mean, all the characters.
I think that, you know, the whole, you know, Winona Ryder, the mother dying, you know, Spock being an outcast because he's like, you know, he's a creamy. He's human and he's whatever, Vulcan.
Yeah.
You know, and Pine, the scene with Bruce Greenwood where he talks about his father. Those are Spielberg moments where you just like, you know, because the thing about Spielberg is people go in to see, for example, in Indiana Jones, people go in to see the big ball rolling down to kill Indiana Jones, and they leave talking about how awesome the scene was when he goes into the bar, and, you know, he's like, hello, Mary, and that, like, little dialogue exchange. Right. And, you know, just like, you know, people probably went in to see Casablanca, you know, or Maltese Falcon to see gunplay, to see, you know, little things like that, and they left, you know, saying, damn. You know, Bogart in that scene, you know, like, that was such a great line delivery. So I think...
I mean, I also think it's interesting, I remembered this the other day when that story broke that they were going to be working on a project together. Like those kinds of scenes where you go to see a movie for one thing and you come out talking about another. Like, you go to see Cloverfield for the Monster, right? And then you come out, and one of my favorite moments in that movie is, I mean, and anybody listening should have seen it by now, but just in case, spoilers, when they're under the bridge... And they're about to bomb Manhattan, and you hear those sirens go up in the background, and it's just like, whoa, it just hits you, right? Because these people are about to die, and they're really in love with each other, and it's awesome, right? That actually, like, one of the most powerful parts about that scene are the sirens that go up in the background, and that was actually a post-production touch suggested by Steven Spielberg when he watched a screening of the film.
Just like the alternate ending of Paranormal Activity, which is the best ending. And anyone who argues differently is dumb. because the other two endings where she, like, whatever, cuts herself, yeah, or, like, the cops come and she gets shot down, is ridiculous. Yeah. And it would totally take all the air out of the movie because it's a one-note, fun movie, but it's one note, so obviously that note has to be strong and powerful. And Spielberg knew that. You know, and that's why Spielberg is Spielberg, and, you know, and... Everyone else is everyone else.
Speaking of this is actually really interesting. HitFix, they came out with an article. I don't know if you guys read it. What does Super 8 mean for Area 51? Orrin Pelley's new, the guy that directed Paranormal Activity, is coming out the movie this year called Area 51, and how, like,
Super 8's about delivery from Area 51 to another area.
And, like, I guess they didn't know about it. I don't know. Like, anyways, he shot this film, but obviously, like, will it lose theaters? Will they want to market that as much if they're marketing Super 8 a lot?
I mean, it's one of those things.
Well, in fairness, Area 51, what, cost $4 million or something?
No,
so, I mean,
yeah. It was an interesting article. Like, how.
And, I mean, if it only costs $4 million, does it really have anything to worry about? You know? I mean, like.
And they also said, Area 51 is about inside Area 51. And
is it going to be, like, the video game Area 51?
The arcade game that you can find outside of movie theaters.
I love that game. Like, with the perp, the blue and pink gun.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I remember being, I beat that game once. I played a video game once and I beat it.
It is actually for those of you who don't know Dan Mega, that is actually something very, very interesting.
That was another life.
But then also, obviously, Air 51 comes out in October, and what's Super Bowl?
I mean, it's like it's like a prestige illusionist thing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, God, how bad was the illusionist?
Dante's Peak Volcano.
Whoa. I like Dante's Peak.
Well, not that it's bad. No.
Regardless of quality.
You know what I read today? Do you know who wrote Volcano? Billy Ray. The guy who directed Breach.
Wow.
Like, isn't that funny?
Which, actually, I just caught up with that movie recently, and it's really
Breach
good.
Is Breach is awesome. So good.
Yeah, really good.
One of the most underrated movies of the decade, without doubt. Like, of the last decade.
Chris Cooper is awesome.
Chris Cooper and Ryan Phillippe, perfectly cast.
And Laura Linney. I normally don't like Laura Linney. She's
was really what? Average.
You don't.
No, I
don't
even get started. I won't comment
okay,
further.
We'll that'll set up for another podcast. All right, let's finish up these two news stories. Quick
speaking
notes.
Of J.J. Abrams franchises,
yeah, he will be producing the next Mission Impossible 4, which will be directed by the Incredibles and Iron Giant director Brad Bird.
Which is strange. Which,
and, but exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very exciting. And
holding true to Tom Cruise's credo that he wanted every single Mission Impossible film to be directed by someone else, which is why the Mission Impossible trilogy / quadrilogy is awesome. And I stand by it.
Except for Mission Impossible.
Nope,
too.
You're wrong.
I saw it in theater. I haven't revisited that one.
I stand by all three of the films. The only part of any of them that I don't stand by is the 30 minutes in the middle of Mission Impossible 2. I will concede those 30
minutes. How long is Mission Impossible 2?
About 2 hours.
It's so I would argue that 120 minutes of Mission Impossible 2 is unwatchable.
You are an idiot.
All right. Anyway, so the point of this news story, unlike talking about Mission Impossible 2, the release date got pushed to a Christmas.
Connor's dumb.
To a Christmas season release date, and Connor's dumb. And, December 16, 2011. So what do you guys think about December?
I think that Valkyrie did well. I'll say that.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I was saying to Dan the other day when this story broke that I think this might be maybe a more suitable time of year for this movie to get released, only because while the Christmas season has been picking up as far as the size of the blockbusters that are coming out, I mean, you had the biggest movie of all time come out in the holiday season. Last year. So that does kind of, I'll admit, put a hole in what I'm about to say here. But, I mean, it definitely, obviously, doesn't pack as much blockbusters in as the summer movie season. But when Mission Impossible 3 came out, I mean, it did okay. But, I mean, one of the reasons that Paramount and Tom Cruise had a big falling out is because they felt that Mission Impossible 3 underperformed.
In fairness, it underperformed a lot.
Well, and it's one of those things that, because of his reputation and all that. And I feel like by now that's kind of going under the
rug. Here's the other thing, though, too. And the reason Valkyrie did well is because those 4 weeks between, be it the 18th, the 25th, the 30th, the 1st, the 8th, people aren't working as much. People are on vacation. People are relaxing. People want to spend more money. So, when is Mission Impossible?
December 16th.
So, it opens the 16th, even if it makes, 35, 40 million, let's say, which would be an underperformance, like Mission Impossible 3, aside from it being a situation in, June or August or July, where it's like, oh, it opened to 40 and it's going to drop to 20 because Transformers 7 is coming out and it's going to be,
Yeah.
You have, yes, it's complicated, 2 is going to come out, Sherlock Holmes 2 is going to come out, these films are going to come out to compete, but you're going to have more attendance. So it makes 40.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like the December blockbuster season, if that's what you want to call it.
I think the smart
isn't
idea,
as packed.
And
as
I don't
the
know if you know about this,
season.
But I think a smart idea would be to pull a Jerry Bruckheimer on Pirates situation and try to cut off 25 mil from MI4.
Oh yeah.
So you could just hedge your bets. I think we'll get a good feel for Tom Cruise's reputation, what people think of him when Night Day comes out, obviously. But
it's really interesting. The 2 points. One was the summer 2011 season is absolutely packed. It's insane. I'm just gonna read off some of the movies that are coming out.
Hit me with it.
All right. So in April, this is kind of the start. Scream 4 and Your Highness. Those aren't that big. But then May we have.
That's right. Your Highness got pushed all the way back.
May is Thor. Pirates of the Caribbean, The Hangover 2, all in May. June, X-Men First Class, which is going to be directed by Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
Fast 5, which Fast Pace did really well.
Wait, yeah. Fast 5?
Which The Rock is joining and talks to join, by the way.
He's in Faster 5. And Fast 5?
Yeah.
Can he be in Faster 5?
No, and then
Fastest 5?
The most fast of the 5s?
And then a week, Kung Fu Panda, which did really well. That And then a week later, Green Lantern. Then a week later after that, Cars 2 and Planet Rise
Cars 2 is getting made?
Yeah.
Rise made that decision.
They
should be dead.
Rise of the Apes. Then a week later...
of the Apes.
Oh, yeah.
And then a week later, Transformers 3. And then a week later, Harry Potter. And then a week later, Captain America. And then a week later, Cowboys and Aliens. And then a week later, The Smurfs. Whatever.
I'm just going to bring a sleeping bag to the movie theater and just pretty much spend my summer there.
There's no way that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
No, half of those movies are going to push
back. No way.
And then a week later...
I think my movie's going to premiere at that time.
Not if anyone cares. I'm kidding. And then literally, and then a week later, which will tie us into our next news story, is War Horse, which is Spielberg's next movie. But before we talk about that, another side note to Mission Impossible is Adventures of Tintin comes out a week after that, which is supposed to be huge, huge. Like,
wait, a week after Mission Impossible?
Yeah. Oh, that is a problem.
Whoa. Which is crazy.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, and not even on here, Super 8. They don't know when that's coming out to be announced, so.
But that will be next summer.
Summer,
because it says it.
Yeah.
It says on the awesome trailer, which yeah. Connor did see.
And supposedly, Mad Max 4.
Oh man, I care so little about that. Wow,
yeah.
I literally, I don't care.
Is it called Mad Max? Even further beyond.
I've never seen a Mad Max.
Really? You know what's funny? I've never seen the first one. I love the Road Warrior, and I like kind of.
Does anybody really with Tina Turner? I don't know.
The Thunderdome is cool. I think. I think it's kind of cool.
It's better than the Thunderdome.
Thunderdome.
So, but also
I like the retracting Thunderdome better.
All right, and we'll bring it back. And you guys ready? All right, now last War Horse, like we said, it was announced it's going to be Spielberg's next project. He picked it up to produce last December when he read the book and saw the play in London, and he loved it. And it's a children's story which tells the tale of World War One from the perspective of a horse. It's a dramatic adventure. It sounds kind of retarded.
It's almost like...
It sounds like Spirit Tale of Cimarron.
It actually sounds like Spirit meets Empire of the Sun. Because Empire of the Sun was like, let's do
a little boy.
War in the Pacific from the perspective of a little British boy. Yeah. And it's like, oh, that's cool. So, but instead of Christian Bale, you have a horse. But
which, ironically, is not much different. Because a horse probably beats his mom too.
But it's weird because he's gonna do pre-production, which he's doing now. Production, post-production, everything. This movie will be out before Adventures of Tintin.
Before Adventures of Tintin.
So
but he's done it before though.
Yeah, I mean, Munich, he War did that
with War of the Worlds.
Jurassic Park, Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love two Spielberg movies in 1 year.
What I love is when he
make Lincoln though. God damn it!
Yeah. Especially with Liam Neeson.
Everyone knows he's gonna be dead.
Well, yeah.
He's gonna get a skiing accident and then die a few days later.
Wow! I wasn't gonna make that joke, and you just did it.
Liam Neeson, I am so sorry, and I love you. I'm raising my beer right now.
But I would say, Connor wrote this story, Interstellar. Remember that?
That sounds so good. I mean, any kind of time travel movie.
Spielberg and sci-fi, just do it.
Yeah.
Minority Report is so good.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because Interstellar reminds me a little bit of, so you mentioned Minority Report, a little bit of Looper.
Looper,
yeah.
Which just got announced this week.
Does it have fun in final?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is rumored to be in that.
So good.
Just again with Ryan Johnson.
Now what about question? If
Source Code
does well, I actually just downloaded that script offline. I can't wait to read it.
That's awesome. But speaking of, if you can, I don't know, slash film, Peter Schreiter, he read the Looper script and he said it brought him to tears. It was amazing. So, I mean,
all right, I don't care.
Well, that's kind of interesting. That guy seems like a guy that would cry.
I take that. That's true. That's a good point. No, I'm excited that Ryan Johnson's doing that because, and I'm excited that he got funding. I'm actually kind of surprised.
Especially after Brother Bloom. Underperformed.
Yeah.
Great.
God, that movie's amazing.
It is incredible. And if anybody out there actually is considering it underperformed, if anybody out there listening has not seen it, do yourself a favor and at least rent it.
Yeah.
But actually, no, buy it on Blu-ray because you won't regret it. It'll be the most. I can't even go on. I won't stop. But go see it. It's great.
Yeah. I will. It's time for some Iron Man, I think.
Speaking of good movies.
Okay.
maybe not good movies.
So, John Favreau returned.
Yeah, last week, Dan and Jordan and I were fortunate enough to...
I did not see it.
Oh, well, you saw it last year. Dan and I were fortunate enough to catch a pre-screening. Jordan caught it a couple days later. Thought less of it. But, yeah. And if you want to check it out, Film Stage's Jack Giroux wrote an article review. I wrote a review, and
Paul Chambers from the UK, who got to see it a while earlier, he came out with a pretty negative review, 3 out of 10.
Very, very negative. Which I mean, I'm guessing Jordan.
He has since retracted the 3 out of 10 online and said it should probably be more like 4 or 5.
Which I agree with four.
I guess that's splitting hairs. But yeah.
So I mean, in this new one, we see Sam Rockwell. Best part of it, I think.
I agree.
Justin Hammer, I agree as well.
Justin Hammer, and then we see Mickey Rourke. Scarlett Johansson,
Don Cheadle, returns, so does Robert Downey Jr. Sam Jackson has, unfortunately, a much bigger role, as does John Favreau.
Which is not as unfortunate.
And I enjoyed it.
What do you guys think?
Okay. My general immediate opinions of Iron Man 2 is that it was an enjoyable summer movie. Actually, I've seen it twice because my family came up for graduation, so I saw it with them. And upon a second viewing, the problem stood out a lot more. And I did enjoy it a little bit less, but I still enjoyed it enough to warrant saying to people, hey, like, you know, go see it. It'll be worth your time and money, you know. And I think the biggest parts in terms of my second viewing that changed criticisms-wise was Mickey Rourke, I think, fails. I think the writing, I think he's very underwritten. I think he crumbles under the shadow of Obadiah Stane and Jeff Bridges and the way that that character was written and the motivations of that character. I think his Russian accent just doesn't hit, even though maybe it is legitimate. It doesn't hit. I think he just doesn't have enough screen time. I think that Sam Rockwell totally overshadows his performance, and Scarlett Johansson is wasted. Unnecessary. She has one scene, which is really fun to watch, but adds nothing to the movie. There are a lot of lines in the film that are over-explanatory, which is to say, scenes in which, like, for example, there's a scene in which a bunch of drones are heading towards Iron Man and War Machine, and Scarlett Johansson says, they're bringing the fight to you. And for 15 minutes before, the drones have been bringing the fight, in fact, to them. So of course they're bringing the fight to you. Because
that's what they've been doing.
So just lines like that, among many others, most of them Sam Jackson's, in fact.
Yeah.
Who unapologetically doesn't try. And it is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
They might as well had a cardboard cutout of Nick Fury. Not even looking like Sam Jackson, like Nick Fury from, like...
The
white Nick Fury. Actually, the David Hasselhoff Nick Fury.
The television David Hasselhoff.
Okay, with Samuel L. Jackson. Not even him. A Samuel L. Jackson voice sound-alike.
Pulp Fiction.
Phone in the performance with a speaker right next to the cardboard cutout, and it may or may not have been better than the performance that was delivered.
Yeah, and before anyone could literally, wait for it, atrocious. Oh my god. But hang on. Let me just... So on the good notes, though, Downey Jr. is still solid. He has... His jokes work. I thought Gwyneth Paltrow, even though she's a lot less likable because she has more of a part, and their relationship is more strained, it works to develop their relationship more.
It's more part of the story.
And the idea that in the comics, and hopefully in the trilogy, assuming there will be one, they will break apart, you know, because... In the comics, they in fact do. And then bringing Happy Hogan more into the equation kind of gives her another leg to stand on, essentially, as a love interest. And then you have Justin Hammer's very solid. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, like the action sequences are good. I really enjoyed the score. And, you know, so, yeah. And then the worst part, though, the carnal sin of the film, is that it goes to dark places and gets halfway down the road, stops the car, turns around, and goes back to fun time. And what's annoying is it makes it half of what The Empire Strikes Back was. and half of what, you know. Essentially it makes it like Temple of Doom, you know, which is why that sequel fails, because it goes to a dark place and then has the fucking gall to turn right back around and get to, like, exciting times. And it's just annoying, because you're like, oh, let's go to that dark place, and then let's fucking just take sunshine and just, like, you know,
I would agree with that. I mean, anybody listening, if assuming that you've read past the first paragraph of my very wordy review, I mentioned it that it does that. It muses on subjects without actually really delving any deeper into them. And that turnaround that it makes, it is, and I agree with Dan, I mean, it's the same thing that I don't like about a movie, like Kick-Ass, for instance, which I liked Kick-Ass very much, but one of the things that movie does is it goes to a really dark place and then tries to come back and have a fun time. And while it's still watchable, it's strange to watch happen in front of you. You're like, okay, where are you taking this?
You feel cheated.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Stupid. You know what I mean? Like, you feel stupid
expecting that these filmmakers are going to deliver on certain things. But that said, I did really like the film, and I'm unlike Dan and Jordan, I've only seen it once, and I can certainly.
I've only seen it once.
Oh yeah, so unlike Dan, I've only seen it once, but I can certainly believe that my appreciation of it would diminish after a second viewing. I can believe that.
And also the other thing about the movie, which is annoying, is it gets worse.
Oh yes,
and I mean that's just.
I think it gets worse and then gets better.
Well, no, okay, yeah. Like people have been saying, the last 15 minutes are very solid, but I mean it gets worse. You know what I mean? Like the first 45 minutes, I very much enjoyed. I remember thinking, like, nice, like this is a good start. Like, well done. A couple things are whatever, but like, just, you know, solid. A lot of things, you know, just good comedy. Bah, 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 this, that, and the third, and then like. Boom, it just falls apart. And, like, it is annoying, and, you know, upon a second viewing, it was even more annoying, but I think at the end it does survive. It is a solid, you know, Two Towers, you know, I equated it to Two Towers in the sense of Lord of the Rings, which is, the least of the films, and yeah. So I think, provided Iron Man 3 is willing to either go high or go low in terms of its emotion and not in the middle, it'll be a solid finish.
And that's definitely the problem with this movie, is it doesn't make up its mind. It like at least with the first one, it when it goes serious, you're willing to go there with it, but it never gets too serious, so it's fine. Like it remains relatively light the entire time. It stands on one side of the fence. This movie, it's like a fat kid that kind of tries to run and jump and make it over that fence, and it just doesn't, and then falls and hurts itself.
Yeah, I mean, first Iron Man, you guys liked a lot. I really liked it, like, the first viewing, and then, I don't know, every time I've tried to watch it, I just got kind of bored. But the difference with that movie is, like, first of all, Iron Man 2, I didn't really enjoy. I mean, some parts I liked, but, I mean, I didn't really. Like Dan said, it kind of hits like a brick wall, like right after the Monaco race track scene. I feel like even there was problems. I don't really like that scene, but it hits like a brick wall there, and it just never picks up. It's just like
the only thing that I think keeps it going is I think there are really solid scenes with Robert Downey in it, and I mean every scene that Sam Rockwell is in is fine. The things that take away from that are the fact that literally every single scene with Samuel L. Jackson is bad.
Really, really bad. The other thing too. Upon a second viewing, was that every scene is too long.
I was just going to say. The pacing in this movie is, like,
Every single scene is too long.
No, like, well, okay, I would say, like I said, I wrote up, like, a top 10 list or whatever things that I didn't
yes,
like.
Yes, you did.
Well, I felt like there were some scenes that could have used more, like the racetrack scene. I mean, obviously, a lot of the action scenes could have used a little more, but, that was one. Then there's scenes that could have been just less in, like, the Senate committee hearings.
Yeah. Like, and then the whole beginning, even though I did enjoy it for the most part, is too long because it's too long.
And then there's scenes that could just have been literally cut out, like the drunk party scene. It was so uncomfortable to watch. I hated that scene.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, though, like, I enjoyed it because it intrigued me. I was like, oh, this is nice.
And
because
Tony
Stark is an alcoholic in the comics. It's his downfall in the comics.
I thought it was kind of a sad scene to watch, actually.
It made me sad because it was like Pepper is doing this whole thing. She's trying to, like, and, like, you know, she's getting totally ignored and, like, you know, all this stuff. And then you have the War Machine, Iron Man fight, which is literally like a prelude to what's going to happen when War Machine becomes a bad guy. And I loved it because I was like, this is nice. But that scene loses all of its clout because that is one of two dark scenes that literally just get circumvented by the end. And it's just like, oh, all right.
And that's, I mean, that's the problem with the movie literally throughout.
And quickly,
that,
though, Don Cheadle, a disappointment.
I disagree, but...
All right.
I think that him getting the chance to kind of go get a suit and go toe-to-toe with Tony and other than have his own action scenes, I just think that like it was more believable to see Don Cheadle willing to do that than Terrence. Terrence Howard always struck me as way too sensitive, way too soft. With that, which actually works for the first Iron Man, only because he's kind of a whiny bitch in the first Iron Man, and Tony walks all over it. In this one, it's his chance to step up and be like,
but see,
all right, like,
I never thought I'd say this because I was so happy when Don Cheadle got cast, but I wish we got to see what Terrence Howard could do because he's not a bad actor. Okay,
he's not
a bad actor. I mean, you know, sure, maybe he's gotten a little bit too much credit because of the Hustle and Flow thing, which was a strange moment in cinematic history when people thought that mediocre film was like more, and then people didn't think Black Snake Moan was good.
Yeah. It was weird.
I will never understand because Black Snake Moan is a lot, I think, better.
I saw Hustle and Flow appear on a lot of films of the decade list. It was really odd.
Yeah, like I don't get why Hustle and Flow got so much credit and Black Snake Moan was just like, oh, it's like a crazy movie. Yeah. Like, but anyway, so I think that Terrence Howard should have been given the chance. I mean, whatever, financial things aside, I'm not going to, obviously... You know,
Either that, or Don Cheadle should have been cast from the beginning, and at least we wouldn't...
Because, I mean, Cheadle just looks like he doesn't really care, and because of that, I don't really care. Just Mickey Rourke looks like he doesn't
like
really
you
care.
Said,
I
would actually switch those arguments. Like you said, Terrence Howard has, like, is not more of a...
I think
saying,
Terrence
I
Howard is a more...
Harder.
He seems harder to me.
But see, I would see... Harder.
And I'm basing this...
You said he seemed like a whiny bitch.
Sorry. Terrence Howard, and not based in general on his acting career, but just based on his James Rhodes, right? He seems softer, whereas Don Cheadle at least... I mean, he seemed like a tight ass, but at least he seemed like he could really kind of, you know, buckle down and go toe-to-toe with...
But also,
whatever,
the chemistry between Downey Jr.
Yeah.
and Cheadle isn't there.
No, and I agree. But I'm saying that the only reason I'm happy that Don Cheadle is now War Machine is because when it comes down to it and the character of War Machine, I think he's more believable.
You know, see, when he got on War Machine and I saw him, Terrence Howard was there, I feel like, if I picture his face and that War Machine cut and his body, like, that felt more realistic to me than, like, seeing Don Cheadle there. I don't know why.
And this is also, this is really not part of my argument because it's, like, not. But, like, Terrence Howard's voice, he's a very soft-spoken person. You know what I mean?
I guess.
And maybe that, like, and I'm not saying that's a good reason, I'm just saying that might be part of, like, why in my head he strikes me as a very sensitive, like, just his James Rhodes is just very sensitive.
But, I mean, Don Cheadle doesn't have, like, he kind of delivers lines, like, the same, I don't know, the same.
No, I mean, I just think that eventually, like, when the franchise continues, I think it'll just be nicer to see Don Cheadle in that role as opposed to Terrence Howard.
One of the biggest problems we can talk about, the tension in this movie, like, I don't know, in the first Iron Man, like, when he gets attacked by a terrorist, and, like, the soldiers around him are dying, and then he rebuilds himself, and puts his heart back, you know, it's, like, epic, and you're like, wow. Like, because I love that. I do love the first, you know, act of that movie. And then, but in this movie, like, there wasn't a single scene where I felt like that.
I would, with a few exceptions, I would agree with that, mainly because in the first one, you are waiting for things to happen, like, in a tense way.
Yeah.
In the second one, you are waiting for things to happen. Like, you know what I mean? But I do disagree a little bit, only because I think that, like, the Monaco Raceway scene with Ivan Vanko comes out. Like, and I love that scene because it does kind of spit in the face of everybody who saw that first shot at Mickey Rourke, myself included, who saw that first shot of Mickey Rourke and went, really? Like, that's Whiplash? Like, okay, whatever.
See, I like the first shot, but
well,
I didn't like
the very first shot, I was like, whatever. And then I saw that scene in the flames, and I totally disagree with that list. The score,
no.
Really good. And a lot,
I agree.
And it does, I will say this, maybe to the point where it does save scenes like that, where it's so, like, he's coming out of the flames,
totally
and the score is, like, awesome.
I totally agree.
And that scene,
I just hate that shot. I've been talking about that where he's at, the he's walking behind and the
cars
him.
Are exploding.
He's whipping. Because if that guy came toward me looking, actually, if Mickey Rourke came toward me in any capacity, I'd be kind of like, whoa. But I mean, with electric whips and cars exploding behind him, it was like, terrifying.
The whips, the sound effects are cool. I didn't like the score. Just felt like I could barely remember. Like, that's how I feel about it. I don't know.
Oh, I'll agree with that. It's not memorable, really, but when you hear it in the film, it works. Like, it works hard.
And I hated how the Pepper and John Favreau were sitting in the car behind them while they were getting on the fight. It just, like, kind of, I was like, oh, like, I wasn't focused on their fight, I was focused on them in the background. You know
what I mean? It adds, like, a stake to the fight. You know what I mean? It's like, not only does Tony Stark have to defeat Ivan Vanko right there.
I don't agree with that. I mean, he, like, pushes him away, and it's like...
They already had that steak bar where they were in the car, and he was chopping parts of the
car. Oh, no, that's what I thought you were talking about.
No, I'm talking about when they were literally fighting, and then you just see Jon Favreau and Pepper Potts in the background just looking at them, not getting out of the car.
Oh, that, yeah, unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the scene, like the only other action scene in the movie...
No, definitely this movie is sloppier. Yeah. Like, without any... I don't even think you could argue it. I mean, it's...
It's as if it's, like, the same superhero, but they, like, just didn't work out for a while. So there's... It's literally not as lean. It has
a lot more
power. I mean,
the script's not as tight. Yeah. The improv isn't as good.
Well, even like, we talk about tension, like, even in the dialogue scenes, which comprises the middle hour of the movie, there was never a moment where it's like, I mean, I know, obviously, Dark Knight is a huge movie that, like, you can't... Shouldn't compare it to, but like with that, like every word, I was like, "Holy shit! Like, what's gonna happen?" In this movie, I was just like, "Oh, that was."
And
like
I don't.
Line,
I mean, I don't. Then, I don't think. I mean, you said you shouldn't compare it to it, and you shouldn't. I mean, you shouldn't put them side by side. But I mean, I do think that this movie kind of. It's almost like they looked back at the summer of 2008, and they said, "Okay, people loved our movie, but people also loved Christopher Nolan's movie, right? What did they love about it? Oh, it was kind of dark. Oh, let's try to go there, and then." But they almost got scared. Like, it's like they...
Well, the
movie's afraid of the dark, essentially, when it comes down to it. Because it goes there, and then it's like, oh, okay, I can't.
One of the,
I mean, like Dan said.
One of the dark moments that would have been... if they handled well, it would have been beautifully done. The father stuff.
Absolutely.
When they had the projection running and so on. Like, if that moment was handled beautifully, like, you would have, like, really felt something. Yeah. And kind of maybe even, like, had a tear. You know, like, I mean... Yes.
Another thing that really bothered me, too, so in terms of getting dark is... You know, I mean, spoiler alert, I guess, for the first half of the movie, if you don't want to know anything about it, turn off now, but
we could just go into spoilers.
But, that's going to spoil. Yeah, I mean, just spoilers in general, just don't stop listening if you haven't seen it, I guess, but in the film, in the first half, Tony Stark is dying, because the palladium in his body is burning, literally, it's literally killing him, because there's no... He has no alternative, and it's poisoning him. I liked it until they were in the diner, and she like pumps him full of like lithium, whatever the fuck, and like it's like this problem that really was an anchor for the screenplay. Really, one of the things that made that first hour worth watching, and then like Scarlett Johansson sticks it in his neck, sticks this thing in his neck. It's like lithium, and like not only does it help him, but like apparently Tony Stark knew about it and didn't want to put it in his body because like it was only temporary, and just kind of stupid because you're like, okay, so not only was that the solution, at least temporarily, but you knew about it. You just didn't want to do it.
But then
there's no reason to tell anybody. Like, you didn't tell Gwyneth Paltrow, like, why would you not do that? Like, then there's that, like, kind of stupid argument at the end. And then, like, I mean, it causes more problems than it solves. And then there's no reason
character-wise.
To do that. And
no,
it's like,
I agree.
What the fuck?
And then they create the new element in, like, 5 months in this basement.
No, not 5 months. It's a lot worse than that. And this is another big problem I have. He creates it in
a week,
20 hours. No. All right, here's how it goes. Okay, if you've seen the movie, here's how it goes. Okay, remember, he goes into Pepper Potts' office.
Yes.
And there's that scene, which me and Connor both really like, where there's this moving, like, pendulum thing, and Tony Stark's trying to move it away. And that's, like, really one of the only scenes between Pepper and Tony where it's, like, a harking back to the old Pepper and Tony from Iron Man 1, aside from the nice little ending where they finally kiss, like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God, that was so nice.
That was saving grace. And, anyway, so they have that nice moment, and then, but in the beginning of that scene, Pepper Potts is on the phone with someone, and she says, oh, I'm going to Justin Hammer's exposition tomorrow night where he's doing da da da. He's showing something. Will Tony Stark be there? And then she says, no, he won't. He's like, oh, I would like to, da da da. And then he finds the city model with, like, he turns his head, he puts in his Porsche.
What would have been, nicer.
But hang on, and then, just to explain the contextualization of the scene,
go for it.
He goes home, does the weird thing, and but I like that, though. And
I like the first thing when he did the basket, when, like, he threw the, like, thing up.
Yeah, what does it look like to you, Jarvis, all that shit. By the way, Paul Bettany was totally wasted in this film. That made me angry, because he was a big part of the first one. And he's Paul Bettany. And so, and then he's like, oh, that's a new element. He's still taking me to school. 20 years, he's been dead, all that stuff. Which was fine. And then he fucking builds a nuclear reactor by himself in 20 hours and creates a new element. And Jarvis says to him, congratulations, Tony Stark or Mrs. Stark, you created a new element. First of all, fuck you, Jarvis. We knew there was a new element. You need to say that. And 20 hours, even for a movie, okay, the movie, here's what the movie had. Here's how you fix that problem. Don't put a time on it. Like, don't put a time on it. Like, literally have it be, like, Pepper Potts is on the phone talking about Justin Hammer's exhibition. She doesn't see the word tomorrow fixed.
Yeah, and that's, like, the thing.
The whole thing is fixed, or she doesn't say tomorrow.
I mean, even aside from that, that is probably the simplest solution.
Yeah.
Even aside from that, Tony talks in the movie when Nick Fury says to him, oh, you should try this. And he said, I've tried everything. How have you tried everything? Oh, maybe all they could have done is just, maybe he already had the reactor because he had been trying different combinations of elements.
It's so simple.
So all it would have been if it was just something he didn't know about.
How about he has a nuclear reactor because he's fucking Tony Stark and he has everything.
Exactly. Like, why build it? I mean, there is a more of an accomplishment.
Well,
there.
I guess because you have the Captain America shield joke, which is funny.
I guess.
Whatever. And also, we can get that Avengers
question.
Stuff. Oh my goodness.
Question. That's Captain America's shield?
No, and here... Well,
it looks like it's a glass thing.
I said this to Dan when we got out of the screening. The reason that joke... And this is minuscule. I mean, even if the movie was horrible, me criticizing this is still dumb. But I'll just say this. For a movie that really wasted time on Nick Fury and Black Widow to try and be like, shield, Avengers, all this stuff, to throw that in, they really shoot themselves in the foot because... People who presumably have been following the news surrounding the first Avenger, Captain America, and the Avengers, I mean, it takes place in World War II. That shield's already been established. Tony Stark has no connection with Captain America or the Avengers. Why the fuck does he have Captain America's shield in his fucking basement? It makes no sense. So it's like, if you're really going to tie all these... Waste 45 minutes of an audience's time promoting the Avengers, which is exactly what they were doing. If you're going to waste that time, because all of that... And then, this is coming from someone... I like the movie a lot. I mean, I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. Maybe in retrospective, depreciated. At worst, I would still say, because I haven't actually seen it a second time.
I'd say at this point, seeing it a second time and having this conversation, fuck you, Jordan, a 6.5 out of 10.
Yes, I would say, yeah. At most for me, even not having seen it a second time, maybe it depreciates to a 6.5. But, that aside...
Still solid.
It killed. Those scenes killed
solid.
Me.
Solid? You know what solid means? Sorry, go ahead.
Fuck you.
No, I mean, Swiss cheese is solid. The only problem with Swiss cheese is it has holes, and that is exactly what this movie is.
That was just complicated.
But you get it.
I got it.
Okay. And that's, like, that is the problem with this movie. It's like, they just really, they have so many holes that were so simple. So simple to
fix. Well, what made the fight scene at the end have some type of tension would be to not have, still have him have that thing. And he's dying as he's trying to fight.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
Or some another element.
See, that was another thing that really made me angry about the movie. Why? Because, okay, in the beginning, it says blood toxicity, 19%. And I'm like, oh, nice. Because it's like 19, it's not like 50. So you're like, they could push it. And then at the end, it could be like 75. Yeah. And he's like dying. He's fighting Whiplash.
Yeah,
the War Machine is like saving his life. And he's like, ah. He's like, I need your help, Rhodey. Like, bah. And then at the end, it's like Rhodey's like Iron Man. And Iron Man is like Rhodey. And it's like, blah, 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 blah. And it's like Dark Knight and all this stuff. And like, it's good. It's a morality play. And Rhodey clearly is power hungry. And Whiplash is dead. And Black Widow has to help Tony, and it's like, everybody matters. But instead, it's like, blood toxicity, 19%. Then 10 minutes later, it's like, blood toxicity, 69,000%.
Well, and that's the problem with this movie, and maybe they did it intentionally, is that, and normally I wouldn't like this about a movie like this, particularly a second part, is that, and it's kind of actually the danger that I think the Batman franchise is in. As much as I loved Death, The Dark Knight, the ending of it, kind of leaves you, like, a little wary, because it's like, wow, what if the third one's not good? Because they leave it open. I mean, it's... people have argued that that movie resolves itself, but it doesn't, really. I mean, Batman becomes the bad guy at the end, and then Batman's the bad guy at the end, and it's like, okay, well, how does that play out? We'll wait and see. But anyway...
it resolves the villain stuff, but not...
Right. Inception is the third Batman movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's secretly that Leo... Leo's Batman.
I think so.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt did the Joker.
Which, good old, in my dreams. But anyway, this movie doesn't do that. It doesn't... It ends, and it feels like it ends. I mean, they receive their medals in the end. It's got, like, the Star Wars and New Hope ending, you know? And
oh, yeah. That was a dumb ending.
Yeah.
Why would they... I don't understand the medal thing. Like, they didn't, like... I don't know. It doesn't seem like they...
Well, they save... lives,
I guess, but it's a lot of lives. The PG-13 thing, losers PG-13, like, you didn't see anyone get killed in the movie.
No, that's true, like, that's true, and I mean, literally, only
you
in
know
the
what
past
I thought,
couple
you know,
years.
You know what I thought was cheap, I'll be honest, and like, at first I thought I liked it, but I thought it was really fucking cheap.
What?
The kid with the Iron Man helmet.
Oh.
I agree too.
You know why? Because, was he the only kid with an Iron Man helmet at the Stargate Expo? Like,
while that was happening? 70 other children died because they got killed by drones.
Because
that was the B scene. That was the B roll to that one.
Mickey Rourke was a Russian genius scientist, and he couldn't create drones that could distinguish between a fucking plastic toy helmet and Iron Man's real helmet. Like, really? 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 This movie sucks.
No, yes, it does.
I'm just kidding. I don't think so. I agree with Connor. It's got the Swiss cheese holes thing, whatever that analogy was. I agree. And
it has, what's like the most holy cheese in the world? That's what
it's,
it has.
It is.
Actually, invisible cheese that just doesn't exist.
That's what it is. It's just invisible. And you just go watch it and you're like, what the fuck just happened? And then you leave and you're disappointed.
What makes me worried about this movie, what worries me the most, is like, I don't want Robert Downey Jr. to become just a gimmick. You know what I mean? Because like, he made Iron Man, that was cool, but then he also did Tropic Thunder, where he played a completely different character. And even The Soloist, which he played... I mean, it was a bad movie, but, like, he was the best part of it, and he played a completely different character.
And
so it was kind of like...
did Zodiac.
And it was, like, Zodiac, and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It was, like, all these different... I mean, it was always him. He always has his own little thing going on, but he was all these different characters, and it was nice. And now it's, like, he's gonna be in Iron Man 2. He's gonna be in The Avengers. Yeah. Like,
did you guys like the... like, in terms of wit and stuff that he had? Like, I thought he was kind of a dick and not in a fun way.
I agree, and I mean... the characters in this movie, they all change. Pepper's kind of a bitch. Rhodey's kind of bored with... I mean, you could argue that he's just bored being in the movie. But I mean, if you want to make an argument for it, you could say he's just bored with Tony's antics. Tony just doesn't give a fuck about them. Like, everybody...
But it all fits to this dark kind of thing that never gets...
Which is the problem, is that you place those characters there, and so you're thinking, like, oh, wow, they're going to go to a dark place. But because they don't commit fully to that dark place, it really just comes off as poor storytelling. Even though I really like the movie, I'm willing to believe that that might be what it is. I mean, personally, I'll play devil's advocate. I'll say it's really just because they wanted to touch on a dark spot. The only problem is that they don't fully go there. But, yeah. And I think overall, I mean, I think...
And also, like, and the other thing that's annoying is, like, how are you gonna, because of that little darkness thing, like, how, in the Avengers, how you did... You know what I think this movie did prove? The Avengers movie is gonna have to be, like, that movie's... they're gonna have to, like, that movie's gonna be such... an equation to solve.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How,
and if anybody could do
if Nick Fury is going to be, and unfortunately at this point, be as much of a character as Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, and the Incredible Hulk, who hopefully the rumors are true, will just be have a cameo role. Yeah. And like maybe in at the end of Iron Man, they establish he might just be a consultant, which would probably be good. And maybe it'll just be like literally more of a Captain America movie with Nick Fury and then like Thor, Incredible Hulk, and Iron Man, kind of like just jump every once in a while. That would probably be the best thing. But like, you know that because of the way things are now, that's not going to happen. They're going to try to over fucking saturate. It's going to be like 3 hours long.
I mean,
like,
don't you think that? I mean, for all the Avengers bullshit they had in that movie, don't you think most general audiences, like I brought this up, that most of them don't know what the Avengers are. Like, I didn't know what the Avengers
are
before this.
That's very
like,
true. A lot of people, and I will say that at least the first Iron Man movie, it sparked interest. Suddenly, people that I had talked to who aren't even comic book fans, but just movie fans, I mean, they heard the Avengers, and it's like, oh, the Avenger Initiative? Okay, why is that cool? And then, you know, and then they suddenly get excited cool. about...
You have Tony
about,
Stark, the Hulk, you have...
No, I mean, they've been doing a very nice job. I liked the after-the-credits thing with Thor's hammer. And I actually, with that photo of Chris Hemsworth, I am excited for yeah. Thor.
Shouldn't know? They have... I feel like it would work better, though, if they just left Iron Man as a movie as itself and then put that Avengers stuff at the end. Like, all of it. Like, hinted a little bit. Like, they're in the first movie.
It feels... Everything... Even... I mean, the way it was edited in... And, I mean, I do agree with this part of the list. The editing of this movie is rough. Granted, you do have to kind of cut it a little bit of slack because there is a lot of improvisation, especially on Robert Downey Jr.'s part, so that'll obviously...
But that's a bullshit.
No,
they could cover that up.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, as far as editing in terms of, like, scenes versus the overall movie, everything with Nick Fury feels like it's not in this movie. Like, if you were to literally take those scenes out and push the movie together, barring a few...
The Clark Rick stuff.
Yeah, barring a few... things with, like, the mention of his father and the mention of the element. Like, if you wanted to cut those scenes literally
to a minute
or whatever, right? I mean, the movie would probably be significantly better because that, in the end, I think is what slows the movie down, is that it keeps taking a time out to say, oh, by the way, Joss Whedon's The Avengers is coming out. So,
he's directing that.
Overall, I'm not as huge a fan of Joss Whedon as a lot of people are, but I mean, the general geekdom, if you will, puts so much faith in Joss Whedon that I have to believe that, like you said, as far as solving that equation, maybe he can do it. Like, maybe he can.
Well, I mean, it'll be a better story, at least.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
Hopefully.
At least then, that's a movie that, okay, if it has multiple different tones and feels like it's a bunch of different scenes from different movies, oh wait, that's because it is. Like, it will be.
Yeah.
You know? But
I mean, I just get like in the last, like Paul, I think, brought up in his review, like in the last couple, 10 minutes of Iron Man, you feel the sense of like a group working together,
yeah.
And like if Iron Man had that the whole time, it'd be great. And I hope Avengers can have that sense of like it's not just these. I mean, obviously the story itself is them putting together.
Yeah, but I hated the end when the shit starts beeping and Rhodey goes, they're all rigged to blow.
Oh yeah,
it's like when things in movies beep
and then flash red at the same time.
And when the bad guy says, you lose. Like,
it was actually kind of like the ending of Predator. I wanted, like, Predator to sit in the corner and just go,
dude, it's so good, McTiernan. Can't McTiernan just direct the Avengers movie?
Just come back.
I just watched Thomas Conifer recently. It was great.
Well, I don't think he can down.
Because he's in jail.
Yeah. Spoilers. Dude, Ivan Benko is going to break him out.
You could pull a Roman Polanski.
There would be blood in the house for us.
Yeah.
The show's doing cool.
Right.
But yeah. So Jordan, out of 10, what would you?
A 4. A solid 4. No, I just...
6.5.
I really like wouldn't like recommend seeing this. Like, I really wouldn't. It's just a frustrating movie. It's like...
Yeah.
There's so much there.
I think if you're an everyday movie goer, you'll see it.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think... And even if people who are fans of the first one have probably seen it already. But I mean, if you're a fan of the first one and you haven't seen it yet, I mean, go see it. I mean, I feel like it would be something worth seeing, even if it's bad, just so you can, like...
But I will say this, though, for this weekend, see Robin Hood instead.
Yeah.
Just because Ridley Scott's a better director.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and John Favreau. At the end of the day, absolutely.
You know, so.
But, I mean, I think I would... And I'll say this, I might not stand by the 7.5 I gave it in my review. But I mean, I would say a solid 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
There it is. Yeah, no, the estimates actually dropped a lot, or the actuals dropped a lot, by 5 million.
Oh, did
it? Yeah, it only made 125 million instead of... Oh, a lot. 125 instead of 133.
Oh,
so 8 million.
8 million.
But it's still the fifth highest...
I think it won't. I think it'll kind of dent. I mean, you know, in so much as it'll. I mean, it'll be called a success, but it'll be kind of. It'll be a glossy kind of a thing.
I mean,
like when people called Incredible Hulk a success, even though it really wasn't, kind of thing. Because they're like, oh, it's a success. Eh.
And I mean,
I think it'll be kind of the same thing. Oh, Iron Man 2 is a success.
And I gave this a 4 out of 10, but it's nowhere near as bad as it never reaches the lows that Spider-Man 3 reaches.
Absolutely.
But I did like the Spider-Man 3 action scenes. Oh, shit.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I disagree.
I literally just rewatched Spider-Man 3, and I love the action scene.
You rewatched Spider-Man 3?
You know what?
The, action scene. I watched the last act of it, and I loved
just,
the action
just
scene.
Just a side note, any and all credibility that Jordan Raup had, anything that he said prior in this podcast, he rewatched Spider-Man 3.
Watch the last action scene.
Here's the thing about Spider-Man 3, and this ultimately what makes it unforgivable, is they take the Venom character and they just waste him.
Oh, because it's a great...
Because he is the Joker of Spider-Man.
No, but straight the action. Sam Raimi can direct action better than John Favreau can direct action.
See, I will say this. That first big action piece in Spider-Man 3...
The building.
Harry Osborn and Peter Parker. Like, he's like kicking the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. Really great scene. I remember when they released that scene online, like, for people to watch. I remember thinking, whoa, this movie's going to be awesome. And actually, say what you will about Spider-Man 3, whoever was behind the marketing for that movie should get a medal. Because, wow.
Of honor.
Yeah, they did a great job, because they made it look like a good movie. But, I definitely don't. I think the Iron Man 2 action is better, and, I mean, Iron Man 2 is just... Immensely better.
No, I agree with that. I mean, it's a lot better. But, and then obviously it never reaches Transformers levels at any point. So that's just because I gave Transformers a 3 at the time. But
you should have done lower.
I should have done lower.
Give it the 1 out of 10 for the Optimus Prime.
Or 2 out of 10. Give it to
for the Force. But
yeah, no, you're right. I mean, if you liked Iron Man 1, rent it. You're gonna see it anyways. So.
Yeah, I mean, you. That's I can't stop. You might as well like. Yeah, and that's all there is to it.
And I mean, we're seeing. Well, we'll have a Robin Hood review.
Robin Hood reviews will be up soon.
Yeah, and just right, we're not going to see, but there'll be a review, and we interviewed them, so there's a junket video going up.
So if you're dying to hear about some Queen Latifah comment and check that out.
There's another
Letters to Juliet.
Yes,
which if you are 15 and you are a girl. Enjoy it.
Well, then I'll be there.
Huh?
Yeah. Also, Ken Loach is Looking for Eric. Only comes to 2 theaters, but it got great reviews at Cannes. You said a lot of people liked it there, and that's IFC for this thing.
Ken Loach, one of the most underrated directors working today. So.
Yeah. So check.
When to Shake Squirrel on? Watch it and give it a chance.
Oh, okay. Good flick.
Incredible.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for the Film Stage podcast. We'll see you next week with Robin.